A non-traditional family struggles with their roles and responsibilities with the fate of the world on the balance. Are you just watching episode 149, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire? Welcome to the podcast that shares critical thinking for the entertained Christian. I'm E. Franklin.
I'm Tim Martin.
And we're so pleased to have you join us on our 15-year anniversary episode. I think technically Dune was probably our real 15th anniversary, but we didn't post our first review until April 2009, so we're going to count from our first review, not our first episode.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. Happy birthday to Are You Just Watching?
Yay! Get ready for prom.
Yeah, that age of 15 is an interesting age. It's actually going to be something we're going to discuss in a little bit. Another irony of ironies is that our last episode was Dune Part 2. And the review that we did after Dune Part 1 was Ghostbusters Afterlife. And now we're doing the sequel to Ghostbusters Afterlife after we've done this. The sequel to Dune Part 1. If there's a Dune Part 3, there better be a third Ghostbusters that comes out right after. We're getting stuck in a rut, Tim.
Yeah, it certainly is beginning to look that way. It's all cycling around.
Yeah.
We're just going to keep doing the same sequels over and over.
Which could be an indication of what's going on in the movies as well.
In Hollywood, yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, before we delve into our initial reactions, of course, I do want to talk about the music. And this soundtrack was done by Dario Marinelli. I have been listening to it a little bit over the last day or two. And it is a very, I guess it fits the movie. It has its spooky parts and it has its comical parts, which is very much what Ghostbusters is. It's a comedy. I don't even think, would you call this a horror movie? I wouldn't even, it's not.
No.
Nah.
No.
Comedy with scary bits.
Yeah, surrealism maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's kind of a little bit like Men in Black, where it's got like parts of it that are kind of gross and scary, yeah. But it's not.
I think that's an apt comparison, Men in Black.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Though Men in Black is better.
Oh, yeah, by far. Yeah, Men in Black is a great movie. It makes me want to go see it again. I wonder if I have that on DVD or streaming or something. But we're not talking about Men in Black franchise. We're talking about the Ghostbusters franchise, which has gone all the way to The Bad Place and back in multiple times. We were talking about the music, and it is a little spooky and comical, and I do want to play just a little bit of the music before to kind of get us in the mood before we review the movie. As you can hear, the music kind of fits the movie.
About the music, the Ghostbusters song is one of the weirdest stories in all of Hollywood for me. Because my understanding is, who was it? Ray Parker Jr., right? He threw it together in a weekend. Just because they lost rights or something, so he literally had to throw something together. Mm-hmm. And it's become such an iconic, and you know, they integrate it into
the movie.
The music of all this is movies and sequels and everything.
Right.
This is a song that was written in, what, 82?
Yeah.
And has lived on and become so iconic
that people,
for the franchise.
People know what Who You're Gonna Call comes from, even if they've never seen a Ghostbusters movie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You could go to different cultures and get people to say, Who Are You Gonna Call?
Ghostbusters. Yeah.
Even if they don't speak a lick of English.
Yeah, that is pretty crazy when something like that can become so iconic that there's lots of things in culture that does that, but it is kind of weird that something, I mean, because really that movie was B-rated. It wasn't even like, I wouldn't even call it like a very well-done movie originally in the 80s, but it was a massive hit. All the kids wanted to dress up as Ghostbusters for Halloween and all this kind of stuff. So I guess if you just catch the right thing at the right time, you can become immensely popular, even if you're not good.
They managed to hook
target audience
their movie on the right star or whatever, and it just took off.
Yeah, and it's meant that there's been a whole series of B-rated, kitschy, nostalgic movies that if you were just watching the movie without any understanding of the franchise or whatever, you would just say, this is awful. Why am I watching this movie? But
yeah,
you have to be in the context of the genre and understand that campiness and nostalgia and all this stuff is just part of the movie.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't there, you'd miss it. I don't know what a good Ghostbusters movie would do. I mean, it's like if they like hit like all of like spectacular cinema, spectacular special effects, spectacular acting, great script, all of the, you know, like A-list everything. And everybody would go, well, that's not Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Yep. It is sort of the bar. It sets the bar
extremely low and meets it every time.
Yeah. Hey. Limbo bars are still fun.
True, true. So I would say that everything negative that we said about Afterlife applies to this movie. Make sure you go back and listen to our previous review on Afterlife. We'll have a link to it in the show notes, or you can just look it up on our website. But anything that we say negative about this movie is going to be a rehash of what we said negative about the previous movie. And a lot of the things that we liked about the previous movie are the same in this movie as well. So why do you ask why we're reviewing it? Because there actually are some new themes to discuss. And when we will be getting to those in a little bit.
With the original, I liked the original. The original, calling it the original is just so weird. So Ghostbusters Afterlife, I liked much more than this one because it had an emotional foundation throughout the entire movie that resonated for me.
Right.
You know, Phoebe trying to figure out her roots and Trevor trying to fit in a new town and all of that. Granted, it had problems.
Yeah. Like I said, everything negative we said about it pretty much applies to this one, too. Yeah.
But this movie, for me, the writing was far worse. It wasn't subpar for me. It was subpar. There are huge plot holes, and every single character, regardless of how smart they are, makes incredibly stupid decisions throughout the entire movie.
Yeah.
Going into the movie, I wasn't surprised that, you know, the plot was transparent, that there weren't any real twists in it. But I was looking forward to seeing how they would resolve it all. And when they got to it, they didn't resolve it all. It was stupid. Like, one point near the end of the movie, all the ghosts escape from the ghost prison. And they defeat the big baddie, but they never show a single thing about what about all the other ghosts.
That's their work for the next, you know, generation is catching those ghosts again.
Setting up the sequels.
Yeah.
The first movie, the very first movie, the 1984 one or 82 one, whatever it was, that was a big plot point. You know, they let out all the ghosts and suddenly the Ghostbusters had to go work, you know, 18 hours a day catching ghosts. And this one didn't even get a nod. So I really feel like it failed to deliver. Speaking of stupid decisions, there's a scene where Ray, played by Dan Aykroyd, is inspecting this weird thing that comes into his pawn shop or his curiosity shop, and he waves the PK meter from earlier movies over it, and it literally overloads the PK meter.
Uh-huh.
And he doesn't get worried at all. I figured the movie would be better titled as Ghostbusters, Bad Decisions and Stupid Choices.
Yeah.
And this movie for me demonstrated just clearly how much more Hollywood is moving away from appropriate content for PG-13. Mm. There's comments in here about drinking liquid courage, which isn't really that bad, but there's a joke made by one of the, I guess child actor isn't the right thing because he really is an adult. The 18-year-old child of the parents about the place looking like a sex dungeon in reference to a deceased grandmother. It's just, it's frustrating how blasé they are about these references. And, you know, okay, maybe it's funny to a 13-year-old, but...
Yeah, I was going to say, there are a lot of guys that joke about that kind of stuff at a young age. So
yeah.
That goes way back. I mean, even back to when we were watching Stranger Things and they were kind of putting us back in the young boys of the 80s era.
The 80s, yeah.
Yeah, that's just little boys.
So two other comments for me. So in Frozen Empire, they once again got all the cast back together, which is a trick that I really feel like they should have left with Afterlife. In particular, they brought Bill Murray's character in with absolutely no, you know, setting. Mm-hmm. He literally just shows up and say, hey, need help? And that's it.
Yeah.
Cracks a couple one-liners and then he's gone. Another thing that I noticed, and it really stuck out for me while I was actually in the movie doing the viewing notes. Throughout the movie, there's several elements of exposition where they're doing info dumps. And in those info dumps, there are several times where biblical references, biblical stories are relegated to mythology. Yet the writings of H.P. Lovecraft, this is the guy who wrote the Necronomicon,
mm-hmm.
are considered factual reference material.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just par for the course. I mean, that we were discussing when we reviewed Afterlife how the biblical content was all apocalyptic without God. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
they take what they want out of Scripture, they cherry pick what they want out of Scripture, but they pull it completely out of the context of Scripture, which is what Satan mm-hmm. does. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, in my notes, there's one point where they say, well, Samson was just a superhero. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I didn't like this anywhere near as much as I enjoyed Afterlife. I thought Afterlife hit the campy vibe, but was carried by the emotional undertone. And this one, for me, was just so much worse because it utterly missed any emotional anchor. And the entire plot depended on stupid decision after dumb choice all the way through the movie.
With no redemption arc, which we know you must have to be like a movie.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. I mean, even Melody, the one who was literally setting herself up for a redemption arc, never has it. She moves on, and you never learn why. It has something to do with a matchbook she carries.
Which is important, but yeah.
It's an important element in the big victory at the end, but even that is very poorly explained.
Yeah. I mean, I think I got the gist of what Melody was as a character. I mean, I understood where she was coming from enough that I didn't feel like mm-hmm. her story was not completely explained. I think they hinted at stuff that they didn't actually say.
Yeah, and I might have not picked up some of those hints.
Yeah, yeah. So that just gives us more time to talk about the themes. So we can...
Yes, let's jump in.
Let's talk about themes. So one of the things I think that they were really hitting you over the head with an iron skillet, because it was Mm-hmm. Like in the first dialogue scene, they started introducing the concept of maturity and age of accountability almost from the get-go, because one of the characters, Trevor, while they're chasing a ghost through the middle of Manhattan, avoiding killing people and destroying everything in their path, they're having this discussion about Trevor being 18 and an adult. And then after they're done trashing half the city and they get brought up before the mayor, then the first thing that he asks is whether Phoebe is old enough to be a Ghostbuster. And turns out she's only 15, which is why I made a big deal about us, our podcast, being 15. So she's a minor, so therefore she cannot be a Ghostbuster. She can be a junior Ghostbuster and hand out stickers, but she can't actually fight ghosts. Which I think is kind of funny that he makes such a point of that when he's actually literally trying to shut them down anyway. So what does he care? But the theme that I was kind of trying to point out from this is that maturity is not a number. And there's a big difference between maturity and, I guess, what we consider being an adult. And it's kind of interesting in our culture today. And I know, I'm positive that we have dealt with this in another podcast, maybe even two or three podcasts, but off the top of my head, I can't remember which ones they were. But the concept that there's like this certain age you reach and then suddenly you're an adult. And then, right. Then you have to start adulting and being responsible and all of this. And so Trevor thinks that he's reached that age. He is 18. He is now officially an adult. He can vote. He can join the army. The only thing he can't do is drink alcohol. Which is, to me, I think is so funny. It's like we consider them adults, but they still have to wait till they're 21 to drink alcohol. But he can do everything else. He's held to the responsibility of adult in every other way. And then there's this whole concept of child labor, which comes out of a historic thing.
Right.
I think it's good that we don't let children work career jobs for a living. I think that's, the children need a chance for an education, and they need to be able to grow up and learn and develop skill sets. The idea that she cannot work until she's 18 doesn't make sense either.
Right.
Because a lot of kids get jobs before they're out of high school. So.
Yeah, I actually looked up the child labor laws in New York City mm-hmm. because I was confused about it, too.
Yeah.
I was working when I was 14. Yeah. I was drawing paycheck and paying taxes and everything.
Yeah.
Even before that, if you count corn to tasseling. So when it comes to a family business, you can work any time of the day or night for any number of hours, but the job can't be hazardous. And that's 12 and under.
Huh.
13 and up, you can work, but there are restrictions to the number of hours and days that you can work. Basically, it can't interfere with your school.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not like Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is a pillar of
legal
factuality here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or legal reference.
Legal authenticity. Yeah. You know what, looking back on it, I'm like, how come she can't work till she's 18? That's ridiculous, because a lot of people get jobs when they're 16 and even as young as 15, mm-hmm. you know, working in grocery stores and that kind of stuff. So that doesn't make any sense. But
I was working with hot grease when I was 14.
But I thought it was interesting because Gary mentions to the mayor that honestly, she's more focused, more accomplished, more capable than just about any other adult I know. And so from a standpoint of maturity, he's saying that Phoebe is a lot more mature than many adults, which is probably the case.
Including him.
Including him, yeah. Well, the intriguing thing about it was what I was just about to say is that most girls are. They usually reach maturity much younger than boys do. And so it's like the girls are like super mature in like middle school and the boys are like still like laughing about cooties, you know?
Hey, I still laugh at cootie jokes.
Yeah. So there's a certain level where some of that is attached to your gender, especially with girls when we become women. There's a certain change in the way we view our bodies and the way we view the world. And I think that that leads to a much younger age of reaching maturity than guys you know, because they don't have like that specific thing that happens to them that suddenly they're a man.
Well,
there are some things
they sort of do.
Yeah, they sort of do, but it's not quite as dramatic as what happens to a girl.
No. I would argue that girls becoming women not only have very specific physical changes, but also have to start considering themselves targets.
Yeah.
And that kicks off an important survival reaction where you got to become serious. You have to start wondering, why is that guy looking at me that way?
Yeah. Yeah. And with that gives a certain amount of discretion and discernment that brings maturity.
Yeah. And boys don't have to normally worry about that.
Yeah.
Especially because they're starting to get broad in the shoulders and become a threat on their own.
Yeah. Which, you know, brings to mind the, you know, the comment that Phoebe said in talking to Gary about this after the scene with the mayor. And she says, now, if this was the 18th century, then I'd already be part of the workforce and I'd have 4 kids. So she's thinking, I'd already be a mom at the age of 15 and I'd already be working, slaving in some. You know, and that's true. I'm not saying the 18th century, historically, that was true. It doesn't necessarily mean it was a good thing that girls were having kids that young and working. You know, the point they were trying to make in this movie was that Phoebe was mature enough that she could have been a Ghostbuster. And it was like this just stupid mayor who was like forcing her out.
Of what she wanted to do.
And I think that children should be allowed within certain guidelines to be able to pursue things that interest them. Granted, you know, the mayor is like, we don't let, you know, kids become police or firemen or that kind of stuff. And yeah, I mean, there's certain levels of danger you don't want children to be setting themselves up to. But they should be allowed to pursue interests.
As a point of order.
Yeah.
I worked on an ambulance in high school.
Yeah. I think my dad did, too. I think he drove an ambulance when he was in high school.
I was an ambulance assistant for a year as part of a work study program in high school. So even that argument. But yeah, I mean, for the mayor, they brought back the idiot council member from the very first. Actually, I think he was in the second movie, too.
He's just got a bone to pick with the Ghostbusters.
It was there for comic. Yeah. The fact that he could get elected is just mind-boggling
to
me.
Well, I mean, look at what they elect in New York City today in real life. I mean, not that mind-boggling, actually.
Hey, stop bringing real life into my fantasy. So I wanted to comment that, you know, they make a big deal out of her maturity, and then later on in the movie, she makes this incredibly stupid, dangerous decision to use equipment in this high-tech lab to force her soul out of her body.
So that she could experience what it was like to be a ghost.
Right, because of her friendship with Melody, the ghost that she met in the park, who died in a fire. So it was an utterly emotional decision that the writing did not support. Now, if the writing had better explained how that particular machine worked and explained why her soul would go back into her body after, what was it, 7 minutes or something like that.
Yeah.
It might have made it more sense. They needed to make it a more sure thing that it wouldn't hurt her. But anyway, she was trying to build this connection with Melody, which we'll talk about in a little bit, and makes this incredibly irresponsible choice on her course of action. So maturity includes the ability to separate emotion from decision. And I think that's one of the areas where girls really do mature much faster than boys.
But at the same time, they never do, because women tend to be much more emotional in their decision making than men do all the way up and through their lives. So emotion is what we hinge our decision making on. And men tend to be a lot more analytical in their decision making. So that is also a gender difference as well. So she made her decision emotionally. I don't know that that was necessarily a lack of maturity. And we're going to discuss this more in our next theme because I think it's an important reason.
A longing.
Yeah. I think it's a very important reason why she formed this connection with Melody. And I think to me, it made sense. You know, what she was doing, it made sense. Now, your point about how we knew that the equipment could be timed, you know, that she could set a timer and come back. I think they kind of left it to that she understood the equipment, you know, like from the get-go when she was shown, you know, that this is what it could do. And she's like, oh, I could do it, use it to do this. There was a lot of leaps of logic in this movie that you may not necessarily follow, and you're just supposed to suspend your disbelief.
Right, right.
That the characters are following it properly, even if you don't follow it. And I agree with you. Those are definitely some plot holes there.
You know, the guy who was the Egon-esque character that was working in the lab, I actually saw in an article earlier today, ironically, that there was an entire scientific relationship arc between those two that got left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
So it's very possible that part of that cutting room floor stuff
fills in some of those holes that we see in the movie. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's unfortunate when they make a movie and the script is cohesive and makes sense, and then for whatever reason, they chop a bunch of stuff out without filling, you know, the gaps that they create in the script. And I could very well see how that happened in this movie, because it does seem like there's a lot of leaps of logic. Like, there was something there that filled that in, and somehow we just, as an audience, didn't get it.
Yeah. I did want to comment on, we did look quite a bit at, you know, what the Bible considers maturity and what it doesn't, and age of maturity. And I know we've actually used this scripture recently, but it's Ephesians 4:14. Then we will no longer be little children tossed by the waves and blown around by every wind of teaching, by human cunning, with cleverness in the techniques of deceit. And it's important because it's referencing that children just don't yet have the experience to be discerning. When it comes to the deceit. And I think that's what we're seeing with Phoebe and Melody. Melody, spoiler, turns out to be a turncoat at the end of the movie, even though she has this wonderful potential for a redemption arc that just gets left.
Well, I mean, she's a bad guy who's pretending to be good through the whole movie. And then at the end, she is convinced to switch sides and help them. And she does. And she's the actual linchpin to them winning against the big baddie. So, I mean, if she didn't switch sides, they would have all been frozen to death.
She provides a fire for this fire master.
Yeah.
A character who I would rather have sat in a room surrounded by chalkboards and nails.
But we're going to talk about
him. Be subjected to his character.
Yeah. That was kind of like me with Jar Jar Binks and Phantom Menace. I was like, why? This movie could have actually been good if you'd left him out.
His character was definitely my Jar Jar Binks.
Well, you know, dealing with the age of accountability from the purpose of the Bible, you know, that we always try to like wrap things back to the Bible. And it's really interesting because there are some Old Testament law things that kind of give you a hint of, you know, what God considers to be like the age when you start, I guess, functionally being part of the adult generation or something like that. But there really isn't given like an age of accountability, especially in the New Testament. And I think that that is a popular interpretation. I'm not going to say I think. I'm going to say the popular interpretation of the age of maturity or accountability, as we would call it, is the age when a child has the ability to recognize what sin is and that they are a sinner. And when they reach that age of accountability, and it can be different from every child, some can maybe figure that out as young as 3, some it might take, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
Yeah. And if there's development deficiencies, like
Down syndrome,
severe autism or anything like, or Downs. Yeah. A lot of Downs kids are, they never lose their innocence.
Yeah. It doesn't mean that they aren't sinners. It just means that they never lose their innocent view of life. Yeah. So it's not an age. And that was kind of the thought that I had going, you know, from listening to this movie where they put so much emphasis on numbers, like 18 and 15 and all that
the
kind of
years.
Stuff. Years. And I think that that is a problem with culture in general, is that we judge a person by their age and not by their maturity level. And sometimes mm-hmm. that can get us into a lot of trouble with young people, especially nowadays when they can stay at home under the protective umbrella of their parents financially as well as in every other way until they're, what, 25 now? So
yeah,
we're not expecting our kids to grow up anymore. So how do we expect them to actually know how to be adults? And some of that maturity comes from being taught how to make their own decisions and stand on their own 2 feet and sever the cords that bind them to their parents and fly free in mm-hmm. the nest. You know, it's like birds will, if they're young, don't leave the nest. They will literally push them out of the nest. You know, it's like,
yes, they have the right idea.
Yeah. I actually saw this, I found this really cool live stream. It's out in California and he live streams a hummingbird nest. And I think it was last year, the hummingbirds have like 3 or 4 clutches a year. So they'll like raise 2 eggs at a time because that's about all that will fit in their itty bitty little nest, which is like super tiny. Their eggs are like the size of Tic Tacs, they're really tiny. But I was watching this live stream and they had the 2 babies were in the nest and they were practically overflowing the nest. They were almost adult size and they're, you know, fighting over the space in this itty bitty little nest. We kept saying, they're going to fly soon. They're going to fly soon. And everybody was like hooked on the live stream to watch them fly. And then out of the blue, the mom dive bombs the nest and scares both of the babies out of the nest. And they go fluttering off to other, because they would not leave. And she's like, I'm done with you guys. I got to lay the next 2 eggs. So she was like, get out of my nest. And so, yeah, I think that that's a really good.
Talk about an eviction notice.
Yeah, yeah. So to me, I think that nowadays, you know, we might put ages on maturity, but if we don't expect kids to get out on their own and hold down jobs and pay for their own, you know, rent or whatever, we're not really treating our children as mature adults. And mm-hmm. I know some of that is financial. I know it's really super hard in our economy to get started. And that every child needs a helping hand. You can't just like throw them out on the street and say, get a job, kid. But at the same time, with help, you've got to expect them to start picking up, you know, the threads of their own lives and actually acting like adults. You know, if they're going to have to live at home for economic reasons, you can start charging them rent. You can expect them to, you know, to have chores, you know, around the house in learn how to do things around the house, like do laundry and dishes and clean. And
exactly. When they're young, start them on an allowance.
Right.
An allowance in exchange for chores.
Right. So I think there is a certain level of maturity that comes at a certain time for every child, but also it is a learned behavior. And I don't think nowadays we are treating our kids like they could ever be mature. And so we're seeing a lot of that working out in our culture today of a lot of immaturity in young people.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to what the Bible says, the popular interpretation from scripture is that until you reach that age of accountability where you know right from wrong and you can discern mm-hmm. the fact that you are a sinner, you are covered by grace. And some of that comes from like the passage where David loses his infant son. And he gets up and he says, well, I'm going to see him again someday. And the understanding being that he will be in heaven when David gets there. So he will get to see his son again.
Right. So there's a difference between maturity and majority. The age of the age of majority is when you become legally responsible as an adult, mm-hmm. right?
You're right.
Or rather, your parents are no longer responsible for your actions, I should say.
Right.
So in Numbers chapter 32, verses 11 and 12, it talks about when God declares the penalty for the nation of Israel losing faith in him. And what it says is, because they did not remain loyal to me, none of the men 20 years old or more who came up from Egypt will see the land I swore to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. None except Caleb, son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Joshua, son of Nun, because they did remain loyal to the Lord. So here you see Caleb and Joshua, the two spies who went into Canaan and came back with honest reports, as opposed to all the other spies who came back lying. They received special exceptions from God, and everyone else, including Moses, God's chosen, and Aaron, God's priest, exiled from the promised land that they literally had been walking to for 40 days.
40 years.
So, well, it was 40 days before they got to, and I might be wrong here. It wasn't 40 years for them to get there.
Oh, yeah.
But it was 40 years after this declaration. I think it was 40 days for them to get through the wilderness, and then this declaration happened, and 40 years they wandered until the last of the generation, the cursed generation, died. And anybody is welcome to correct me. Please leave your comments on either the show notes, or you can call and leave us a message, which we will play during our episode.
Yes, yes. Please correct us if we're wrong.
Maturity and majority being two different things.
Right.
Your parents are no longer responsible for you at majority, but you can be mature. And, you know, maturity is not something that's across the board. You can be very mature in some areas and very childish in others.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, I think that was one of the major themes that they were trying to bring out in the movie. I think it was quite obvious that they were trying to present that as something that, you know, they were contrasting between Trevor, because, you know, like, Trevor's mother was trying to push him to be more responsible through the whole movie, and they never really had to worry about that with Phoebe, because Phoebe was always the mature one, and I just thought that was an interesting contrast that they were doing. And
yeah,
I'm going to carry that over to our next theme, but I do want to just interrupt and thank our supporters, those who give to us financially. Our patrons are Isaiah Santiano, Craig Hardy, Stephen Brown II, David Lefton, and Peter Chapman. They've been giving to us monthly for some time, and we really appreciate their support. You can also support our podcast by going to areyoujustwatching.com/Patreon or patreon.com/areyoujustwatching. They go to the same place. Any gift is a help, but we would really appreciate it if you would consider giving to us on a monthly basis, just to support the ongoing financial needs of the podcast. And if you give $5 or more a month, then you get mentioned in every episode you support. So we thank you so much for our supporters. All right. So we've already discussed that Phoebe makes some stupid decisions in this movie.
Yeah.
And I think that part of that is because her parental figures in this movie perhaps trusted her maturity a little too much. And I think that in a situation where you have a child who's super mature, and from whatever reason, you know, I think in this instance, Phoebe's maturity probably comes from the fact that she's in a broken home where her mom is mm-hmm. extremely childish, and she doesn't have a father to depend on. And so she's a little like some people where, you know, it's like, if no one else is going to take control, she'll be the responsible one because no one else is being responsible. Yeah. And I think that there are certain personalities that they will take over responsibilities because no one else is doing them, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they want to do it, that they want to be left on their own, or they want to be isolated from, you know, the guidance and the training that we all would like to have in our lives, you know. And she needed boundaries. She needed a parent to tell her what she needs to do with her time, especially when they tell her she can't be a Ghostbuster anymore. And when she's trying to like feel them out for like, what am I supposed to be doing? Who am I supposed to be? You've just taken away yeah. from me everything that I've spent, you know, the last few years just wanting to be and you know, the focus of my life and all of my interests. And you say, I can't do it anymore. Now what am I supposed to do? And all she's getting is, well, you're young. Go and enjoy your young life until you're 18. She gets absolutely no direction from anybody about what that's supposed to look like. So she's basically left at loose ends, and she goes out seeking connection. She's seeking purpose that has been taken away from her. And the people who should be giving that connection and purpose to her are simply leaving her behind or leaving her out. And I think that that is something that for a childish movie with plot holes and all of the other things that are wrong with this movie, I think this is a very mature observation about what happens to even the good kids when they are abandoned. Yeah.
I want to real quick throw in here, because I'm 99% sure we talked about it in Afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
She has the worst parents in the world.
Yeah. You're just going to leave it at that?
Yes. I mean, it is like the superlative of worst parents.
Yeah. Yeah.
Most likely to ruin their children.
Right. Right. And like I said, you know, for a lot of young people, that's how they reach maturity at a young age, is by having awful parents.
Right.
And
right, right.
Her mom is very childish. She doesn't have a dad. And the dad figure doesn't know whether he's supposed to be a dad or not. And that is one of the scariest things about this movie, is this constant, like, him feeling out Callie as to what his responsibilities are about the kids. That, you know, that they're living together, but he doesn't feel like he's supposed to be the dad. And when the mayor asks him what his relationship is with Phoebe, he says that he's her step teacher instead of her step dad, because they aren't married. Yeah. And Callie's never given him permission to be the father, which she does give in this movie. Sort of.
And they've been married. They've been married.
Yeah, they haven't been married. Living together. That's the problem.
With the children for 3 years, and this has never come up before?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's disturbing.
Maybe it has come up before, and she just continues to waffle. Because that's the thing about her, is that he keeps trying to, like, feel her out. And I feel that that is happening through the whole movie. It's like almost every scene where they're together, he's, like, trying to feel Callie out as to what the relationship that she wants him to have with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that that is indicative of what it's like in this culture we have today, where, you know, you have the single mom with the kids, and you have the boyfriend who doesn't know what he is for the children, and
or doesn't want to take any
responsibility. Which I think that Gary wanted to take responsibility.
I think so too. Yeah,
but he just doesn't know. He doesn't know what he's supposed to be doing, and so. I feel like he wanted to be the father, but he didn't feel like he had Callie's permission to be the father. And that comes out of the fact that Callie is an awful mother, and she can't make up her mind. And so I think really it all comes down to Callie just being an awful mother. But it's a vicious cycle that we see in young people throughout our culture today, because we have a lot of broken homes, a lot of single moms, and a lot of absent fathers. And we have a lot of kids who are put into pressure of being heads of households before they're of age to be, you know, mature enough to do it, being forced into mature roles in their family before they're ready, or being abandoned and not knowing where to seek the familial ties that all children want to have. And so I really think that, you know, Phoebe's position in this movie is almost like an everyman for the children of our culture today, that, you know, raised in broken homes, who a lot of times are severed from the things that would keep them out of trouble, forced into seeking those relationships in places where it's not safe for them to seek them. And getting into trouble because of that, and making unwise decisions because of that, because they don't know any better. Nobody's taught them any better. And it all comes down to Proverbs for me, because my small group has been going through Proverbs every other week. We've been kind of interspersing it with Hebrews, which is kind of interesting to do Hebrews 1 week and Proverbs the next.
Yeah. A very apropos juxtaposition.
Yeah. But there's a lot in Proverbs, and I haven't picked out specific verses because it's throughout the book. I mean, it's you just have to just start reading in Proverbs. It's everywhere. But the whole point of Proverbs is a wise father instructing his son in wise behavior. And a lot of it is just avoid the foolishness of life. Avoid the people who are going to lure you into sin and to death and to all of the bad things, and be able to discern what those are and avoid them. And it's spoken of over and over time, like the adulterous woman who lures the foolish young man into her bed, in the absence of her husband, and all of this kind of stuff. It's like, it's Proverbs is just full of it. And that is all but, you know, hinged on the fact that there has to be a father or a mother who's teaching their children this wisdom, you know, this level of discernment. And if they don't have it, if they don't have somebody in their life who's teaching that, it doesn't matter how mature they are. If they haven't been taught wisdom, they're still going to make mistakes. And that's what we see going on in this movie, because Phoebe is mature, but she lacks wisdom because nobody's taught her wisdom. She doesn't have discernment. So when she meets somebody who's friendly and really connects with her on
interested in her,
mm-hmm. connects with her on that intellectual level that she operates on, she gets sucked into that friendship without even looking to see if there's a motivation behind it.
Yeah.
And so, yes, she makes some really stupid decisions, but I think it's not her lack of maturity. It's her lack of wisdom, and wisdom and maturity are slightly different things. So just like maturity and maturity are slightly different things. So,
Yeah. And scripture actually makes a big deal out of how being alone isn't good.
Right.
And that part of being God's people is that we are never alone.
Mm-hmm.
We see the first mention of aloneness in Genesis chapter 2. 2:18 says, "Then the Lord God said, 'It is not good for man to be alone. I will make a helper corresponding to him.'" Complementing, you know, the whole idea is to work together, to be a team and be a family, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, more times than I could reasonably count, there are many, many references about how we are never alone because God is with us.
Right.
Two that I picked out were Isaiah 41:10, "Do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be afraid, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will hold on to you with my righteous right hand." And then one of my favorite verses, one I always go to for reassurance, Joshua 1:9, "Haven't I commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or discouraged, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go."
Yeah.
So we're never really alone.
Well, we as believers are never alone.
Yes. Good point. Good point. And while we may feel alone, when we feel alone, remember that, you know, Jesus said, and I don't remember the exact reference, but Jesus said, "I am not going to leave you alone. I'm going to," I don't remember if he said, "I am sending a helper," or if God is the Father sending a helper or something like that. But even he said, "Hey, the Holy Spirit's coming. He's going to pick up the slack once I leave."
Yeah. That is from John 14:16.
"If you love me, you will keep my commands, and I will ask the Father, and he will give you another counselor to be with you forever. He is the Spirit of truth. The world is unable to receive him because it doesn't see him or know him, but you do know him because he remains with you and will be in you."
Yeah, I love that, because it's the world
That's
will never 15 see him.
Through 17.
Yeah, the world will never see him. So this, it is contingent on belief in God, that we have that assurance that we are not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is why the abandonment of young people is in our culture today is so sad, because even if they're still at home, a lot of times they're abandoned in the most important ways. And so they go seeking that companionship, that need
of fulfillment in places that they shouldn't go. And some of them find it in college with, you know, authority figures who tell them things yeah. that are not true and indoctrinate mm-hmm. them in beliefs that will lead to awful things for them in their future. Some of them turn to gangs. Some of them turn to cults. Some of them turn to science and humanism. And none of it will fill what they're really looking for. And, you know, to me, it's just sad. It really is that so many yeah. young people turn out like Phoebe. They may have the maturity to appear to the world like they're ready to live on their own. But in the reality, they're just little kids that have been abandoned and all they want is just to belong and not necessarily be taken care of, but belong. There's a big difference between those. So, all right. Well, before we move on to our last topic, I do want to mention all of the ways that you can contact us. There you can comment on the show notes, which will for this podcast will be at areyoujustwatching.com/149. And can't believe we're almost at 150. That's kind of amazing that we've gotten so far on this, doing this podcast. I do want to remind you also, since we're talking about show notes, that we have changed hosting. We are now fully hosted with the Christian Podcast Community. And after we post this episode, assuming we get it out in time, we will also be switching hosts for CPC. So there might be some downtime as we figure that all out in the month of June. I hope we will continue to hopefully get monthly episodes out starting this month. But, you know, so much hinges on that. And hopefully the switch over to a new hosting authority will go smoothly and we'll be able to post as expected at the end of June. But you could also call us by calling 513-818-2959 and leaving us a voicemail. You can email feedback at areyoujustwatching.com. And as Tim mentioned earlier, you can leave us reviews. You can even review something we said, send us corrections, or you can also review a movie you've watched or a book you've read that you had some significant insight about from a Christian worldview. And we would be happy to receive an audio file and play that on a future podcast if that's something that you like to do. We would absolutely love to hear how our listeners are applying what our philosophy of don't just watch to their own entertainment, and know that it's not just us doing it, that we're teaching you how to do it as well. And we'd love that kind of feedback. We'd highly recommend that you join our Discord server. You can get to that by going to areyoujustwatching.com/discord. That will give you an invitation to our server. Come be a part of our community. We are also on Facebook. Areyoujustwatching.com/community will take you to our Facebook group. I do try and make sure I post our episodes in there, if nothing else. There hasn't been a lot of activity in there otherwise, but we'd love to have discussions there or in Discord, get to know you all a little better. You will most likely find myself and Tim by coming to our Discord server too, though, because neither of us are in Facebook much anymore.
Yeah.
All right, so the last thing I wanted to talk about in this movie was legacy building. And I do want to discuss the character that is Tim's Jar Jar Binks, because there's something about him, and it's the reason why Tim doesn't like him, is that he's a very immature, somewhat useless character until he suddenly needs to be redeemed and save the day. And part of that is because he was left a legacy that he didn't pick up. And I think that this kind of tumbles on from the point that we made with Phoebe, is that she's kind of abandoned to her own devices. And she is asymptomatic of our culture, that we have so many young people who, for whatever reason, either it's never passed on to them, these legacies are not passed on to them, or they actively spurn the legacies that their parents and grandparents are trying to instill in them, which I think is what Nadim does. It's like he has a grandmother who has this wonderful legacy that he's supposed to be picking up and carrying on that goes back generations. And he's just laughing at it. He doesn't think it's real. He's very immature and doesn't care and just willing to sell the stuff for money, because really all he needs right now is money. And because, you know, there's this break in this legacy, then it creates this hole in which this really big bad baddie can like take over New York and freeze everybody. And while that is, you know, that is typical of a Ghostbusters movie, you know, to have the the big baddie and all of that. And Nadim had to have dropped the ball, and literally dropped the ball, since it's this ball that is holding this big baddie captive that was in his grandmother's.
Nice pun.
Yeah.
Nice pun. I like it.
Got to get the dad jokes in there since they didn't do some so well in the movie this time.
Yeah.
So Nadim literally dropped the ball and let the big baddie out. Well, he dropped the ball and then...
He literally dropped the ball by not paying any attention to the grandmother's legacy. But there was a brother, wasn't there? Didn't he make comments about his brother being the successful one or...
Yeah.
Something like that.
But I'm not entirely sure either of them were interested in their grandmother's legacy, though.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, and I think it was, you know, like the real world was taking over. And you know, I think that you know, Christian families deal with that a lot, too. It's like when you're raising children in the world, then a lot of times if the importance of the Christian legacy is lost on them, and they just think it's something, you know, it's just that thing, you know, the old people do, and they want to abandon it and do their own thing. And it put me into mind of Joshua 4:21-22, when they pick up the stones out of the river Jordan, when they cross it, and they make a monument.
The dry riverbed.
Yeah, the dry riverbed. They actually pick up the rocks from the middle of the dry riverbed. And he said to the Israelites, in the future, when your children ask their fathers, what is the meaning of these stones? You shall tell your children, Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground. So this was like a physical testament to the fact that they did this, that this isn't just a story that, you know, just a fancy little story that we're telling our kids. This is, you know, we have a physical monument that proves that we crossed over the Jordan on dry ground. Mm-hmm. This is the importance of passing on your legacy. And I think it goes back to what I was saying about Proverbs earlier, you know, that you're supposed to be teaching your children wisdom. You don't wait till they reach the age of maturity. It's something you start when they're very young, and you just keep teaching it, and you keep teaching it, and you keep teaching it, and you answer all their questions from a biblical worldview. You make sure that they have answers. And at the same time, you don't hide the reality of the world. I know that there's a lot of kids that were like sheltered their entire lives. They never watched a TV show. They never were exposed to the news. They never knew what was going on in the real world. And then when they suddenly left home, it was like culture shock because they had no clue how to deal with the world. I think part of that legacy building is showing how that legacy fits in with the rest of the world so that there's no culture shock. It's like, you know, that there's bad things in the world. And you know that God has promised you good things. And you put both of those together in a legacy building that equips your children to deal with what's going on in the world so that they don't spurn that legacy. Yeah.
I feel like politics has sort of taken over the idea of legacy because it's always about what are you going to leave for your legacy? What are you going to be remembered for as being great?
No.
But legacies really, they really are lessons to be learned.
Right.
And this movie really has almost no people learning lessons from their previous generations.
Yeah.
Maybe the only people in this movie who demonstrate that they have learned a lesson is in the very opening scene where they're chasing the dragon of Hell's Kitchen. They go by a set of cops in a car.
Mm-hmm.
And the cops are like, should we call it in? Nah, they got it. They're the only ones who learned their lesson.
Yeah. Well, not go chasing after that. Yeah.
Nobody's demonstrated that they've learned the lesson except Winston, Ernie Hudson's character. He shows how he's building a new ghost prison to move all the ghosts over. And he's setting up this research institute to better understand ghosts and, you know, try and figure out how they can be harnessed and everything. But they set all this up as him being proactive and forward thinking, and none of it comes into play for the resolution of the movie.
Yeah.
He just sort of vanishes and just becomes a Ghostbuster again. All of his proactiveness and forethought is just left behind.
Well, part of that is because I guess because they were facing a demigod who was not necessarily a ghost, but somebody who was smart enough to use their technology against them. So he was bigger and better, badder than anything they could put together. And I keep making excuses for this movie. I don't know why. But anyway, you're the Ghostbuster
person. You may be
person.
Right. I may be crazy.
You know, from a Christian worldview, I think that it is an interesting thing to look at what happens when the legacies are not passed on, the lessons are not learned. Mm-hmm. And that is, I think, an important reminder to us as parents, even though I'm not a parent, you know, to all of us in the Christian community.
As authority figures
mm-hmm. to young people, to make sure that we are passing on the wisdom and the lessons of the previous generations so that they learn from our mistakes and that they learn the wisdom that will prevent them from making mistakes of their own.
This is exactly what Paul is pointing out in Romans, mm-hmm. that was the responsibility of Israel.
Right.
As the keepers of the law to pass this information on. And what you read from Joshua 4 was an example of how important this was. Mm-hmm. But by the time Paul writes Romans, we see that they failed. They started to focus so much on tradition and gut feelings mm-hmm. that they have forgotten.
Yeah, they're just going through the motions.
What the law actually is. Yeah.
Yeah, they're going through the motions and it's all external behavior and not internal. We had a really good sermon in my church this last week about training up children. It was a really good Mother's Day sermon, really, about you know how to be good parents. And one of the points he made is that your target in parenting is not the external behavior, but the heart of the child. And that is so much of legalistic religion is the external behavior. As long as your kids are dressed up nice and behave well while they're at church, then everybody will think I have good kids. But that is not what makes a good kid. It's whether their heart is in obedience to God and they've been taught to understand their need for God and follow him in obedience. And like when Samuel was talking to Saul, it was like this, you know, God doesn't want sacrifices. He wants obedience. There, it goes through scripture a lot, you know, about God wanting, you know, he wants a humble heart. He wants all of these things, obedient hearts and all this kind of thing, not the exterior man. And that's what the Pharisees had wrong as they were following the letter of the law, but their heart wasn't, you know, in obedience to God. They were using it as a means for their own self-aggrandizement, you know, to make themselves mm-hmm. great. And that was the whole, a lot of the point of Jesus's Sermon on the Mount against the Pharisees. You know, it's like, in Matthew, I think it's 6, I think, where he says, you know, like you pray on the corner to be seen by men. Assuredly, I say to you, you already have your reward because you've been seen by men doing it. So, yeah, mm-hmm. it's like this constant reiteration that it's the heart that is important and not the exterior. And that's where the legacy needs to be built, is in the heart.
Yeah.
Well, I hope everybody has enjoyed this discussion. I think we've managed to keep it fairly short, and we apologize that we have been a little bit slack in getting our episodes out this year so far. I think we're like 2 episodes down now.
Yeah.
It's been a hard year.
We've been hit.
Yeah.
Yeah. God willing, it will get better.
Yeah. But, you know, we do still have a commitment to this podcast. We're not going to let it fade. If we miss an episode here or there, just know that it's on our minds and we are going to get one out. And we apologize especially to our supporters because, you know, they're paying us monthly. We should be getting an episode out monthly. But we're going to try and do better going forward now that we get all this hosting stuff figured out and possibly get our lives back on even keel. But don't know what we're going to be doing for June, but we'll figure it out and we'll let you know on our social medias, hopefully in advance, what we're going to be recording on. And we'd love to have you join us live in our Discord. We're currently recording in our recording stage, but of course nobody's in the audience with us, but we hope in the future that people will join in and join us in some of these discussions. Anyway, I think that's it. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Eve Franklin.
I'm Tim Martin. And don't just watch.
The Christian Podcast Community is a cohesive group of like-minded Christian podcasters proclaiming the truths of Christ with expertise and passion in the areas of theology, church history, Christian living, evangelism, apologetics, parenting, homeschooling, sermons, and much, much more. So check us out at ChristianPodcastCommunity.org, one stop for all your favorite Christian podcasts.
christianpodcastcommunity.org.